Welcome everybody to the Magic Beans podcast. We're here for episode number 3, a little bit earlier than we were planning on, but we've had a pretty good weekend, so we're here to have a chat about it. My name is Shorty, I'm your host for today, and I'm joined by a bunch of beans again. We have Chewy on the line. How's it going, Chewy?
Good. How's everybody?
Yeah, pretty good. That's the way. We're joined by Scott the Blaster Boy, as always.
Hey guys, evening all.
G'day. And we also have Cracker. How's it going, Cracker?
Very well, thanks. How are you, man?
Yeah, pretty good. Unfortunately, I didn't get out to a pre-release on the weekend. I ended up working for most of the weekend, so that was good fun. Everybody's favourite task for the weekend when you know that other people are out there playing Magic, but such is life sometimes when you need a little bit of extra money for home renovations and things like that. These are the things you have to do. So, but I believe a couple of you guys did get out to some pre-releases for the new set, Core Set 2020, which pre-release came out, started up on the Friday, which is actually something different from previous sets. Normally, when a new set comes out and they have the pre-release on the weekend, there's a midnight release, which a few of us have played in a number of times over the years. It's always good fun, isn't it, fellas? When you get there at midnight, you're already trashed from your hard day of work. You've got to try and stay up for the next 4 or 5 hours and play a bit of Magic.
That's when I actually start feeling properly old.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah. Back in the day, we would have been fine doing those things, but time has certainly taken its toll on us, and that usually led to playing one or two rounds and then bailing and going home and having a couple of hours sleep before the kids woke us all up.
Well, I did say the other week that you and I, especially Shorty, have been around since the dinosaurs as far as Magic's concerned. Yeah. But that was only really Ixalan. It was only a couple of years ago, so it doesn't actually work.
Yeah. Yeah, we're real young, that's
yeah,
right.
Yeah, spring chickens.
Yeah. But this set is the first time that they've actually changed the process for pre-release, and they allowed stores to run their first tournaments on Friday at 7 p.m., which for us seemed like a fantastic idea. It means we can actually get out a bit earlier and play a bit earlier.
Sensible
although none
hour.
Of us actually... Yeah, none of us actually made it to the 7 p.m. one, but it meant that they could run a flight at 7 p.m. and then at 11 p.m. So just starting that extra hour earlier makes a bit of difference for us old fogies.
Yeah, and so, they did it so two flights at 3 rounds each rather than one flight at 4 rounds. So it was more Magic.
Okay, I didn't know that.
Yeah, so it meant that for those who wanted to double up, you got 6 rounds in of your pre-release for two different decks rather than just one finishing at, basically dawn the next morning.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
Much better.
Yep. Yeah, I know the times where we have stayed for the full midnight pre-release, usually we go to Next Level Games in Ringwood. We have a mate of ours, Andy, that we've known for a very long time, who runs that store. Shout out to him. And it's not exactly the closest store for a lot of us. So by the time it finishes up playing your last round of the pre-release, it's sort of 4:30, sometimes close to 5, half an hour to an hour's drive home. You finally get home, get into bed. You're lucky if you get an hour's sleep and then the kids are banging on the door. So it makes it pretty hard when you've got a weekend planned of things to do. So giving us that Friday option now for pre-release, I think that's going to be pretty cool going forward. And hopefully the next set that comes out in a few months, I'll be able to make it to that one. And yeah, maybe we can try and get the full crew together and have a big representation at one store. I think that'd be pretty cool and be a good experience for you too, Scott, for a new pre-release. I think you've done pre-releases in the past.
I have, yeah. I did one pre-release a few years ago now with a mate of mine. We went down to our local gaming store and at a 12 o'clock or midnight thing. I swore I'd never do that again, but these 7 o'clock ones, they're a lot more reasonable. But I enjoyed it though. It was just very late.
Yep. Yeah, they're slowly bringing these pre-releases further and further back. Eventually, they're going to get to the point where 2 months before the set releases, they'll have a pre-release at 2 o'clock in the afternoon or something for the really old, decrepit people who can't get there in 2 months' time or whatever.
They'll have the grandpa pre-launch at 4 o'clock in the afternoon.
Yeah. They'll start providing beds to have a nap in and things like that.
I'll go to that one.
Like more our cup of tea.
They should have a special early pre-release for people with only 8 digits in their DCI number rather than 10.
Yeah. We haven't all been playing for as long as you, Chewy. Anyway, so yeah, Cracker and Chewy, I believe you two made it out to an actual in-person tabletop pre-release. So if you guys want to give us a bit of a rundown on how that went, how you found the format, what you think. It is a core set, so generally a core set is pretty basic in terms of its mechanics and the themes and archetypes within the whole set, which can often make it quite fun. So Cracker, how'd you go?
Great. So as you mentioned, Chewy, Chris, who couldn't make it tonight, and also Chris's brother Matt, all headed to certainly my local game store, Next Level Games in Ringwood. And yeah, we got to play the 11 p.m. pre-release, and it was great. There was about 20 odd people in our flight. So as Chewy mentioned, there was three rounds. And it's sweet, right? The set is really sweet. I didn't open kind of the bombiest of pools, which is what you always hope for in sealed, to kind of, you know, get on color mythics and like stacks of stuff to go with it. It kind of didn't pan out like that.
You didn't honestly open the six land rare packs as everyone seems to be opening on Arena that we're seeing all over Twitter.
No, I did play against the dude who opened three of the temples.
yeah, that so hurts. His That's no good
fixing
for your seal
was
pool.
Great, but his card, yeah, he's just like, I can find my cards. They're just not any good. so that was kind of rough. But I was really happy with my pool. I ended up playing like a blue-black deck with a splash of the White Angel, one of the new legendaries, and with the idea that I could cheat it in. So it was Safara the Skyblade, which costs 4 white. So 7 mana total.
Ooh, that's a nasty mana cost.
It's pretty good. It's a 7/7 with flying and lifelink, though, and other creatures you control with flying, heavy, and destructible. So it's a bomb. Right, like it's straight up amazing, and it has an alternate casting cost, which says you may pay a white and tap 4 untapped creatures you control with flying rather than paying the spell's mana cost. So I went, sweet, I can just cheat this into play. I may or may not have actually cheated against Chris. So the people I played against were Chris and Chewy and the guy who had also played Chris and Chewy in the third round, because we all just ID'd because we were just having fun. So it was the casualest of magic. And yeah, with Chris, I just tapped 4 creatures and like convoked this thing out and didn't realize because I'd stopped reading before I got to the has flying part.
didn't read the card properly.
No, don't worry about that. It's fine. So yeah, my deck was sweet. The games were grindy. Like, super, super grindy. There was a couple of games where you could kind of just take a lead and run with it. But the last round I was playing against a guy, Brad, and we ended up on, I was on 6 life, he was on 4, and I had 3 cards left in my deck. And like, it was just great. The magic was sweet. So yeah, as you mentioned, a little more simple than some of the more recent sets, particularly when you've just come off War of the Spark with like 36 planeswalkers.
Yeah, all with static abilities and things like that. It's very, very complicated.
But I mean, like, as you're kind of playing through, there's just all these like sweet synergies that you don't realize are going to happen until, you know, you start playing them and going, oh, this happens. Oh, like, I have a creature. It's just a common. It's like a 3 mana 2/2, when it attacks, it pings you for 1 and you draw a card.
Audacious Thief.
Wait. Audacious Thief. Exactly. And then I also had a card in my pool, which was Vengeful War Chief. And he says, whenever you lose life for the first time each turn, put a +1/+1 counter on him. So he's a 5 mana 4/4. And then I attack with this other dude, it triggers and he becomes a 5/5. So like just sweet little things like that that you don't expect when you're looking at your pool. I didn't sit down and think, well, this interaction is going to come up and it's going to be really nice. It just kind of happened. I went, oh, nice.
just accidentally built it that way.
Yeah. And like, you know, and it's synergies like that that Wizards have done a really good job with. There's obviously like a really strong elemental theme in this. And Chris had a really sweet elemental deck sub-theme, basically. And so he had a 2-4 and then another creature that he could tap to give a creature with power 2 or less unblockable for this turn. But when the 2-4 attacked, it got +1/+0 for each other elemental. So he would make it unblockable and then attack with it and become like a 6-power dude. So there's just a lot of really fun, not super complex, on-board kind of tricks that were just really just good to learn and play with. And like, as we've said a couple of times, like, we're not, I'm particularly not like huge into limited, but every time I play pre-releases, I'm like, why don't I do this more? Like,
yeah, they're always just good fun.
They're just so much fun. And it's, part of it is that the cards are new and like everyone's happy and like just chilled, right? I'm not playing for sheep stations or anything like that.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's just the games are really fun.
Yeah, and like you said, it's a bit more casual. Often when you play at a pre-release, but basically your prizes that you get are based on how many wins you get normally.
Correct.
So if it's a 3-round pre-release and you win 3 rounds, you get 6 extra boosters as your prizes. But one of the things they offer is that if you have a draw in your round, you both get 1 pack. So you get 1 pack, your opponent gets 1 pack, whereas normally if you won, you would get 2, your opponent gets nothing. So often what will happen, like Joel said he did with most of his opponents, is you sit down to play against your opponent and you just say to him, look, do you want to intentionally draw, or ID as everyone calls it, where you basically just say, all right, we'll still sit down here and we'll play, but we're just going to write it up as a draw so that I get a pack and you get a pack. And then that way everybody's happy and it means the match that you play is super casual. And you get that quite a lot at pre-releases, and not everybody wants to do that. You do get people that go, I've opened a really good pool, and I think I can do really well, so I want those extra packs. But yeah, most of the time it's pretty casual, and most people are happy to take an ID and just get their free packs and sort of have a fun night and make a bit of fun of it.
Exactly.
I 100% agree with that, because you get good value just out of your entrance. Like the $40 with the promo, the dice, and 6 boosters is actually a pretty good rate. And then
and the arena key.
Yeah, don't forget the free draft on arena. Mm-hmm. In my first round, I played Brad, who Joel played in, I believe, the last round. And I won that round 2-0, and we had our match slip, and I just, without even consulting him, really went ID. And I said, we'll just ID so we both get a pack. He was stoked with that because, you know, he got a pack that he didn't think he was going to get. We had good games. Like, I didn't, you know, I won 2-0, but it wasn't a complete whitewash. So we had good games of Magic. We had good conversation. He was a, you know, friendly opponent. If he wasn't so friendly, maybe I wouldn't have been generous like that. But, yeah, he was a guy who's a regular at that store who, you know, is always up for a good chat and a bit of banter, so I enjoyed that. So I was lucky in those games, really, that both games I drew my promo, which happened to be the Rotting Regisaur. So Scott, that is a 3 mana, so 2 and a black for a 6/7 dinosaur. So pretty undercosted, and at the beginning of my upkeep, I have to discard a card. So I built my deck with that in mind. So I had a lot of sort of, as Joel said, the things are quite grindy in this format. So I had a lot of looting abilities and card draw abilities. No like straight up card draw spells, which my deck would have loved. The divination that costs 1 less if you have a flyer, but I had the Audacious Thief plus the what's he called, the War Chief, the Vengeful War Chief, that same synergy that Joel spoke about. So I guess, you know, it's a thing in this format. And my deck was great. My mana curve was a little bit high, I think. Ended up shifting up to 18 lands, and essentially in the games where I hit my 5th mana, I won or came close to winning. Otherwise, I just kind of died whilst my opponents did their thing, and I died with cards in hand. But that happens.
That's always fun.
It was fun.
Yeah. Well, I think that the London Mulligan actually helped me in a couple of spots. So If you haven't listened to episode 2 of the Magic Beans podcast, pause this now and jump back and listen to that. But Joel does a really good wrap on that. But anyway, so yeah, the format is super grindy. It's really fun. I was blue-black and I almost had a red-blue Elementals deck. Like, it was certainly cooler to have the Elementals deck, but it needed to have one or two cards, and the blue-black deck was better, even though it wasn't as cool. But yeah, it was pretty great in that sense. So I did enjoy it. And I've also been playing a bunch of Arena with some of the newer cards as well. But I might just pass over to Scott really quickly, who's also been playing with some of the Arena cards. So Scott, I've been doing some sealed as well as some constructed, but you've been focusing just on constructed. So do you want to just share with us your thoughts so far on some of the new cards? I know that, you know, a set who is headlined by Chandra is probably something that appeals to you.
yes. So I haven't done any of the actual events on Arena, mainly because I didn't realize he could. I probably will now that I know. So what I basically did was I looked at some of the cards that were in the M20 set that I liked the most, or that appealed to me the most, and then I sort of built a deck around that. And I've actually been liking it. So the three cards out of the M20 set that I've liked in particular has been the Chandra Acolyte of Flame. I just love the way that you can spend zero Planeswalker cost to bring on two Elemental Flyers. They only last for that one turn, but they're flyers and they have haste, so they can do damage straight away. But that then also works closely with the Scorch Splitter, or Spitter, I think it is, where you bring that out, and every time it attacks, it also does one extra point of damage as well as a flame damage. But then I use that along with Chandra's Regulator. I think I'm pronouncing it right. So they're the three cards that I've sort of taken out of the M20 set. But then they all seem to work really well with this, I think it's Cavalcade of Calamity, where basically...
it's an easy one to say, that one.
Cavalcade of Calamity.
Say that so 10 times fast, yeah.
So the theory here is that... now, I'm probably going to get this totally wrong, so just bear with me. But the theory is that you can put down these Cavalcade of Calamities, they're enchantments, so that every time you attack with a power one or less creature, it fires off a fireball. So and I've actually had a few games where I've managed to get Chandra out, I've managed to get out her Regulator, which duplicates that ability. So I cast the 0/0 or the 0 fire elemental ability, and with Regulator, I get to repeat that ability again, so I end up with four of them. And then I have a whole bunch of these little goblin 1/1 goblins with haste, and they all attack. So every time all of those guys attack, I get a fireball going off from Calamity. So, and again, I apologize because I'm not explaining this very well, but there was a game last night I played where I ended up having, I think, 10 or 11 fireballs all going off at once, plus the attacks from the creature.
A whole bunch of triggers.
Yeah, it was over it. Like, and they're all one cost creatures as well, so they're very cheap to bring on. And so if you get a really good draw, usually all you need is two red land cards. And if you can get two of these goblins, which have haste, and also you can sacrifice them as well. So you can sacrifice one of them to do damage. And I think that's the Fanatical Firebrand.
Yeah, it's Fanatical Firebrand, yep.
Yep. And then the other one is the Dodger, he can't be blocked. There was another one, Torch Courier. Yeah, yep. Where you can sacrifice him and give another creature haste. So I use his sacrifice a lot on my Scorch Spitters. So that way, I think in that game I spoke about briefly, I had three Scorch Spitters out. I had the Regulator out, and so I got four of these Elemental Flyers in that one turn, all with haste, all flyers, and then the three Spitters also attacking, along with my Calamity. So I had two Calamities down. And it was just crazy just watching this screen just fire up with just flames going everywhere. And even I couldn't
sounds
keep
like
track of what
right
was going
up your
on.
Alley.
Yeah, well, it was just a fluke. I thought, oh, this should work. I didn't expect it to do what it did. But
it's good. This is the sort of stuff that, like, you're piecing together synergies, basically. You're going, okay, this card does this, and then this other card does this, and if you put them together, then there's this extra effect that happens. And that's basically how you start what everyone calls brewing a deck, which is where you have an idea, and you go, okay, these two cards work together. Right? Well, what other cards can I find that go together with these deck with these cards to actually build a full deck? And you do a lot of that in sealed pool construction when you're playing a pre-release. You have a pool of cards rather than access to all the cards that are currently in the format. But you're looking at those cards going, okay, which cards work together? And that's basically how you do that whole process. You know, I've got all these cool red cards and they do these sorts of effects, and I compare them with these other cards that work well with them together. And that's how you build your deck. But yeah, you're taking your first steps into the brewing world where you're finding these cards that work together, that synergize together. The deck that you're building, it's going to win you some games. It might not be the best deck. It's probably not going to be the deck that wins the next Pro Tour or something like that, but it's a step in the right direction, and that's good to see. It's good to hear that you're doing that sort of stuff.
It doesn't go very well against white lifelink type decks, I found. That's probably when I'm at my weakest. I haven't come across any blue decks yet or anything that involves blue, so that really hasn't bothered me too much either. But if I can get the right cards in the first two turns, then it can be quite exciting to play. So, and I did say I was going to move away from red, but I think I'll be playing this one for a little bit longer.
Back in.
Yeah.
There's nothing wrong with playing a strategy that is good. Don't not play a color just because you want to try anything else. Play what's good and play what you enjoy. But I guess the challenge for you now that you've found this synergy that sounds pretty bonkers, it's awesome. It's about finding a way to make your deck do that consistently. And that's what Shorty was alluding to with brewing. Find a way. Make that the focus of your deck. Don't try to find all a bunch of other little synergies that work together. Make that the focus. That's a really powerful thing that'll win you a lot of games. The first thing, the obvious thing, is you want to play four of all of those cards that have that effect, because that ups your chances. And then try to build that in a shell that is able to win even if you don't draw those pieces. So if you play mono red elementals with, you know, lightning strikes and shocks with a bunch of creatures that can attack, then even if you don't get your synergy, your combo, then you're still gonna be competitive and you're still gonna win games of Magic. And I recommend having once you've got that, maybe have a look at, and this is probably a topic for another episode, but have a look at playing best of three, because you can go, oh, I'm losing against this strategy. Having access to a sideboard can really help that. So life gain, you can play Tybalt, the planeswalker that says players can't gain life, right? So there's a lot of levels ahead of you just by following this path. And but first of all, like, just make your deck do that thing as often as it can.
Yeah, and that's what I think sideboard is probably where I want to go to next as well, because I mean I'm already fighting now.
We'll
I've got too many lands. Like, I've got 20 lands, and I think that's probably too
that's
many.
That's probably about right. But yeah, without looking at your deck list, that's a bit hard to judge. But yeah, like the mono red decks that are getting played in standard at the moment are either running 19 or 20 lands.
Okay.
If you are playing best of one, that's something we can talk about on another episode, is there is a hand smoothing algorithm, so you could shave a land or two and still get away with it. But generally about 20 is where you're going to want for that sort of a deck anyway. But what I would suggest for you, Scott, with this new format, is jump onto Arena and give one of the sealed events a go. You can jump into a sealed event. They're 2,000 gems for a sealed event. You get your packs like you normally would on a normal sealed event, so you get your six packs. And then take your time and look at the cards. There's no, when you do a pre-release in person, you've got 50 minutes or whatever it is to build your deck and sleeve it up and get ready to play. But doing it on Arena, you can open your sealed pool and read every single card, take your time, sort through the cards, do, you know, take as long as you want, and you can take screenshots of it and post it to us and all that sort of stuff to get advice, and just see if you can figure out, okay, what colours do I have good cards in? What colours do I have bad cards in? Do I have any of these synergies and this sort of stuff that you're looking at with your red decks that you're playing at the moment, and see what you can build. It's a really good tool, and I like when I first started playing Magic a very long time ago, I loved the pre-release events because, yeah, it was a really good chance to learn how to play competitively and how to build decks and brew. And you got to put your deck to test straight away. Like, you literally sat down, built a deck, and then it's like, right, now I get to play against somebody. So, and you can build your deck. You can play one game with that deck, and then you can change it up. You don't need to keep the same deck. You're not locked into playing that deck for the whole seven rounds or whatever it is for the sealed event on Arena. You can change it up. You can play one round and go, well, that was just a disaster. I'm going to change. I'm going to go from playing red-white, and I'm going to change my deck to play green-black, and you can do that. So it's a really good experience, and that's something I definitely recommend for you. So, yeah, maybe if you want to give that a go and then next couple of weeks, and then you can report back to us and let us know how you went.
Yeah, I think I'll definitely do that this week.
Yeah, cool. I believe, Chewy, you've done a couple of sealed pulls on Arena.
Yeah, I did one just before the pre-release, the in paper that we went to. I was green black. My rares were rares I was happy to get for my collection, but not great as far as the sealed event. I had like a Leyline of the Void and a Graftigger's Cage, so I'm coming for you, Joel.
Not really good, yep. Sealed cards.
Chris opened those in the paper pre-release. What are the chances?
He got a foil Graftigger's Cage too, yeah.
Oh, nice. Yeah. Very good.
But my deck was solid. It wasn't amazing. I won four rounds, but lost three. So the way that the Arena sealed works is it's up to seven rounds, best of one, and you play until you've got three losses. So I had four wins and three losses, and we can what did we lose to? We lost to the first one, we lost to the Black Cavalier, then we lost to the Blue Cavalier, and then we lost to the Green Cavalier. So my deck was pretty good. It just couldn't deal with bombs the caliber of the Cavaliers. The blue one I dealt with a murder, but then it shuffles back in and my opponent drew it two turns later. So that was a bit of a sort of middling result, but the gameplay was really cool. And then on Sunday morning, I did another event. I unfortunately didn't record it for the YouTube channel. The green black one is up there. You can, anybody wants to watch me get smashed by Cavaliers. But because the chaos of morning cartoons and breakfasts and such, I played the second event, and I ended up with blue white flyers. I had a Drawn from Dreams as one of my rares, which is the 4-mana sorcery, blue and 2, that lets you look at the top 2 cards of your library and put top 4 cards of your
top
library.
Seven, so, yeah,
and put 2 into your hand. It's a pretty good draw spell. I also had 4 copies of Pacifism, which was really great.
Yeah, that's pretty nuts.
Yeah, it is at common, so yeah, I was happy with that. I had 2 of the Cloud Kinseer, had a Spectral Sailor, the Boreal Elemental, which is the 5-mana 3/4 flyer that taxes your opponent an extra 2 mana if they target it, so it's kind of just annoying to remove. So, and I had one of the Empyrean Eagle, the 3-mana 2/3 flyer that makes all of your flyers bigger. So classic blue-white flyers archetype. So we did a bit of a chat about archetypes for Constructed in the last episode. Maybe we need to do something similar for Limited in the future. But blue-white flyers is one of the classics. And we went 7-0, which was pretty great. So So what have I played? I've played 14 rounds and I'm 11-3 in limited. So pretty sweet.
Oh, nice.
Yeah.
Good work.
Yeah. So not a terrible, in best of one. So 14 games and, but yeah, the deck was really, really powerful. It was really quite good. And it inspired me to sort of update some standard decks, which we'll talk about in a bit. But, overall, I know you mentioned in the intro, Shorty, that core set can be rather basic, but I genuinely enjoy core set limited. I've been playing Magic for a long time, like since Fifth Dawn and drafting that whole time. I qualified for the Pro Tour at a limited GP, which was a limited Pro Tour. It's something that I really do enjoy.
Did you go to a Pro Tour? Yeah. I didn't know that.
Sick brags.
I don't think we'll hear about that very often.
Anyway, my point is I love limited as much as I love drafting.
My point is I went to a Pro Tour.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. I'm just here to add legitimacy to our podcast. But
yeah, that's right.
There's a lot of limited sets are based on the synergies of the mechanics of the set, and that becomes the focus. But what I enjoy about core set drafting is it is about good magic, as in good deck building and good play, and it gets back to those fundamentals. And it's not about
fundamentals.
Yeah, yep. And I enjoy that. And I think the fundamentals of magic is probably, as me as a player, one of my strengths. I genuinely do enjoy it. So.
Yeah, one thing I find with core sets, often there's usually a cycle of uncommon color pairs. So your 10 color pairs is the 5 colors of magic, which leads you to 10 color pairs of those 5 colors. There's usually in a core set, there'll be 10 uncommon cards that are of each one of those pairs that have something like a signpost to tell you, okay, this is what this color pair is meant to do. So often, yeah, for blue white, it will be a blue white flyer that has something to do with other creatures flying or something like that. So they help you kind of push you in the direction of where your decks should be for those color pairs. And by printing them at uncommon, it means you're not going to open heaps of them in your sealed pools or get them in your draft, but there's enough of them out there. They're not the rares that you don't get all the time. And they help to move you into or give you a direction to go in. You know, you open your sealed pool and you go, oh, I've got 2 or 3 of these blue-white flyer guys. Okay, well, maybe that's where I should start for building my deck. Yeah, definitely, like Chewy said, brings you back to the fundamentals of magic and that sort of thing. So one of the things that we did want to chat about, being an old school fundamental thing, was protection has been reprinted into the format. Cracker, do you want to have a crack at explaining to us what protection is?
What is protection? Okay. So the protection I'm thinking of at the moment, I can't remember the name of the card. It's a two. Oh, there you go. Should we just put the notes in? It's a Cerulean Drake, right? Is the one that jumps to mind immediately. So it's a 2-mana blue flyer. It's a 1/1 and it has protection from red. So protection from red means that it can't be targeted by red creatures or spells. It can't be dealt damage by red creatures or spells. It can't be blocked by red creatures, and so therefore if you block with it, it doesn't do any damage to the creature either. So it's kind of, but if you had a card like a 3-mana deal 2 damage to the all creatures, then you know it would be fine. But there are other ones that, you know, like if it's targeted, it's protection's hard.
Okay. So
that's why I passed it to you.
The actual rules say a permanent with protection can't be targeted by spells or abilities, enchanted by auras, equipped by equipment, fortified by fortifications, or blocked by creatures, and all damage that would be dealt to it is prevented. So So obviously in there is off.
My first question is, what the hell was fortified by fortifications? I have never heard of that before.
don't ask, because then I'm talking about banding or something.
Flanking and
a very old mechanic. But basically,
you can't interact with it, right? And they've got one. You can't do anything.
There are some corner cases, but it's really rare.
Of course, right. There's cards like Progenitus, which famously has protection from everything, except if someone casts, like a Damnation or a Wrath of God or whatever, it still dies.
Yeah,
it still dies.
And that's one of the things why we were kind of surprised. And for the last, I don't even know, it's been ages since this mechanic protection has been ripped, like printed into new cards, because it is confusing. It would have been in, surely it's in some core sets since Shadowmoor, but I don't know, could be wrong. Yeah, either way, it's been a long time, and the reason why it wasn't printed was it is complicated, and for new players it's quite hard to understand. And in the last, it was in Dominaria, I think it was, they printed it was hexproof, so
that's right.
There were two cards. There's two old school cards, White Knight and Black Knight, that had protection. So the White Knight had protection from black. The Black Knight had protection from white. They printed some new versions of those cards that gave them hexproof from white or hexproof from black. And hexproof means that they can't be targeted by something of that color. So if I've got
that, your opponent controls.
Because
with actual protection, like you can't equip like a sword that says protection from blue to a blue creature.
You can't even target with your own stuff. So the hexproof was a bit of a way to get around it. It didn't prevent damage or anything like that, but it was a way to stop people from killing them with those color spells and things like that. So that was the closest we'd seen, and even that was, I mean, that was a couple of years ago now, and that was the first thing we'd seen for a while. And now, all of a sudden, out of the blue, we get protection back into the format. And one thing I've heard from listening to other podcasts is a lot of people were quite concerned how that would affect the limited format. In constructed formats like standard, it can be a bit of a pain to deal with. If someone plays a Cerulean Drake that has protection from red and you're playing a mono-red deck, well, I'm sorry, but there's not much you can do about that creature. You're just going to have to kill them anyway, so that's fine. You just ignore the creature. But Cerulean Drake also has an ability that counters spells, so that makes it even better. But in limited formats, often it can be a case of I'm playing a red deck, you play a guy that has protection from red, and I basically just can no longer win the game, and you just slowly attack me with this guy that has protection from red, and that's game over. So did you guys find any of that in your pre-release or in the sealed that you've been playing on Arena, Chewy?
Actually, zero. It hasn't come up in the games that I've played. There's been the color hoses that have come up, but not to the point that they just dominated the game. So I think they might have got the balance right. I'm sure there'll be games where it's like, oh, my opponent had that thing and there was nothing I could do, but it's not a common occurrence. For example, I mentioned the Shadowmoor set earlier. There was a cycle of uncommons that were 4-mana 3/3s. There were 2 and 2 hybrid mana. So, for example, the red-green hybrid. So red-green hybrid, and 2 for a 3/3 with protection from black and blue. So it was really, really hard to deal with. And 3 damage a turn chipping away was an actual clock, whereas the cards so far that I've seen haven't been too bad. I did have an opponent play the new Ceratops. I think he's a 4-mana 5/4 can't be countered protection from blue. But
yeah, that guy seems quite good.
Yeah,
he's the most pushed, right? The rest seem fairly beatable.
Yeah, I did manage to win that game when my opponent had that, because I think that, and this is, again, probably another topic for a future podcast, I think my opponent kept that hand just because it had that card in it and the rest of the hand wasn't very good. And that card, just on its own, whilst it's certainly good against my mono blue deck, having protection from blue, and my Wizard's Retort in hand looked pretty silly when he cast that card. Because the rest of his hand didn't do a lot, I was able to overcome that. So another topic on sideboarding and what hands to keep. That's something that we'll get into down the track with Scott later on. But that's the only time I've seen those cards come up. I've certainly cast Cerulean Drake out of my mono blue sideboard a number of times, and it's been very good. Obviously, against mono red, it's great. It's also been really good against the Elementals deck and against the Drake's deck, because the Drake's, all of their threats and all of their removal is red. It's a really good card in that matchup as well. So, because they go quite tall with, you know, they want to attack you with an 11-4 Drake, but, you know, you can just kind of sit behind your Cerulean Drake and get through. But it's I think for constructed sideboards, I think these cards will have a bigger impact than they will in limited. That's my opinion so far. You know, again, like 15 games in or something.
Yeah. Yeah, not a massive sample size.
Yeah, but as you were saying before, Shorty, I mean, you're very incentivized in particularly like this limited format, right, to be two colors. So you're likely to have interaction from both your colors, hopefully. You know, like the blue black deck I had had an enchantment that could, you know, tap a creature down, it wouldn't untap, so effectively a removal spell, or it had Bone Splinters, which is a black removal spell. So because they're only targeting one specific color, there's this kind of worked arounds in the construction of the deck, and you are incentivized to not just get absolutely wrecked by it, because it's pretty unlikely that you're going to be able to put together a really strong monocolor deck in this format, because like the payoffs are so good for, you know, having those uncommons you were talking about before. You kind of really are incentivized and drawn towards trying to make something work, because they really reward you in doing so.
That's right.
I mean, because everyone's playing, you don't know what you're playing against. They're not really a main deck card, because none of them are, like, apart from the Ceratops, none of them are so powerful on their own. Then you don't really want to have them in unless you know it's particularly going to target, you know, what your opponent's doing.
Yeah, that's right. And especially on Arena, where the sealed format is best of one, and most of the drafting that happens on Arena is, there's a lot of best of one drafting that happens. You're not playing that game two and game three where you would be sideboarding cards in to bring in those cards with protection or those hoses and things like that against the opponent that you see. You don't get that chance. You're just playing game one, so you play the best cards, and if they're not the best cards, then you're not going to play them.
Yeah, exactly. You just want to be as proactive as you can, right? You just want to get them dead.
Yep. Yeah, but
not try and sort of play around what they may or may not have.
Yeah, that's right. But like you were saying, standard or the constructed formats is where this is going to come into it a bit more. We sort of thought we'd have a little bit of a chat about what we're looking forward to seeing in standard. I haven't quite gotten into the spirit of brewing just yet. I've been pretty swamped with work the last couple of weeks, but listening to podcasts, hearing about a lot of other people talking about decks and things like that. So I've got a few cards that I'm interested in sort of exploring and seeing where people build them. Unfortunately, we don't have a Mythic Championship for the standard format coming up. The next one that's in a few weeks is a modern one. So most of the pros and the people that really push the decks and that sort of thing, where you get to see really high-level constructed decks that have been tuned, and they're going to be working on modern. So generally when a new set comes out, there's maybe a couple of cards, sometimes half a dozen cards, that might have an impact on the modern format, being a larger card pool. There's not quite as much brewing unless you get a set like Modern Horizons, which came out not that long ago, and that seems to have turned modern on its head. Standard is where you really see that. A whole new set of cards, 280 odd cards or something, get put into this small card pool, and you get to see a big shakeup go on there. So have you guys seen anything that's sort of piquing your interest, or any cards that you're interested in sort of exploring?
Standard experience so far, I just added Spectral Sailor to Mono Blue effectively and wanted to test that out because I thought that could be a player. It's pretty boring as far as, you know, new decks.
What is Spectral Sailor?
Spectral Sailor is a 1-mana, 1/1 blue creature, and it has flash, and it has pay 3 and a blue, and you draw a card. It is a spirit pirate. Check out our YouTube channel. I wear a pirate hat by playing it. It's super entertaining. during my testing on playing on Arena, I've run into a couple of super cool decks that I think have potential, and a new deck in a new format obviously takes a bit of time to find the optimal list. So I think there's definite potential there. The first one that I think is very cool, and Joel, as someone who enjoys putting armies of 2/2 black zombie creature tokens into the battlefield, there's a Field of the Dead list, which is it's a land from M20 that enters the battlefield taps for colorless mana, but it says when Field of Dead or another land enters the battlefield under your control, if you control 7 or more land cards with different names, create a 2/2 black zombie creature token. So there is a ramp deck. So ramp being a deck that wants to put as many mana sources into play as possible. And then it plays Scapeshift, which is a card that was printed a little while ago in... I can't remember when it was released, but it was reprinted in...
I think it was in M19, wasn't it?
It was reprinted in M19, but I can't remember when it was originally printed. But it's a 4-mana sorcery, 2/2 green, and it says sacrifice any number of lands, search your library for up to that many land cards and put them into the battlefield tapped, and then shuffle your library. So this is a modern staple where it uses Velikit, the Molten Pinnacle, to Lightning Bolt.
Yeah, there's a whole deck built around it.
But in Standard... the land that it has is the one that creates the zombies, the Field of the Dead. And I had one opponent who made 14 2/2 zombies in one turn. So they had a whole bunch of lands through, you know, their deck just puts lands into play, and then they find a scape shift, cast it, make this huge army of zombies, and then, you know, they plan to attack back the next turn for some massive amount of damage. So super cool. And I think something that's probably got a lot of potential could be a complete, you know, flash in the pan, somebody going, this might be cool, or it might be something
just a random
that is,
brew.
Yeah, or it might be something that's actually viable and playable. So it's
I have heard of people running it in a Teferi deck, small Teferi, so that you can play your sorceries at instant speed. So they're playing Scapeshift at the end of their opponent's turn and
that's the dream.
Sacrificing all their lands, yes, and then getting a whole bunch of zombies and then untapping and killing them.
It effectively gives you zombies haste, right? So
yeah, pretty much.
Yeah, that's incredible.
The other card I've seen in that deck is the new one, Dread Presence, which is 3 and a black.
Yeah, I've heard about that one too.
And whenever a swamp enters a battlefield under your control, you choose one, and it says you either draw a card and lose a life, or Dread Presence deals 2 damage to any target and you gain 2
life. Yeah, I had that guy at the pre-release. So actually, he was bonkers. Yeah.
So I've seen a gameplay video, I forget who it was, where they did that. They sacked, you know, like 6 or 7 lands. It might have been 8, actually. And then they just went and got, like, Overgrown Tombs and Blood Crypts and Swamps and just like a whole bunch of
the
stuff.
Scry lands.
They were all swamps. So they just machine gunned their opponent's board.
Nice.
Because the card doesn't just deal damage to opponents.
It's any target.
It deals it's any target. To target. Yeah. So they just killed a bunch of their creatures and then they just drew a bunch of cards and their opponent gave up.
Yeah.
Because why wouldn't you? So there's some spicy things kicking around.
Yeah,
sure.
It's very cool.
Yeah, definitely this set definitely seems to have a few cool cards in it that have either...
I think it's more powerful than a normal kind of core set. It feels a lot like it's got a lot more impact already.
Yeah, definitely.
The M19 set did, which was... kind of your very traditional kind of core set. This one, like with the Prediction and the Cavaliers, you know, some of the Mythics and things and some of the other cards, there's some really push stuff, which is pretty sweet.
Yeah, yeah. And, yeah, one of those cool cards that I've heard of a few other people playing and that I'm definitely interested in brewing around myself is Flood of Tears. This is a card that's right up my alley for weird combos and things like that you can play. So Flood of Tears is a blue sorcery. It's 4 blue-blue for its mana cost, so 6 mana cost. It says return all non-land permanents to their owner's hands. That's a good start. Seems like a good commander card, actually. Might put this one in my deck. If you return...
No.
If you return 4 or more non-token permanents you control this way, you may put a permanent card from your hand onto the battlefield. So the card that I'm seeing people pairing this with, and I think, Chewy, you played against someone on Arena playing this deck,
yeah,
is
awesome.
Omniscience. Yeah, so Omniscience has been around for quite a long time, I think. Basically, it's a 10-mana enchantment, so it's obviously quite hard to cast normally, but... Once it's on the battlefield, you cast cards from your hand for free. So the sort of the combo, I guess, with this card is you return all your cards, return your creatures and whatever else you've got on the battlefield to your hand. So as long as you get 4 or more of those, and then you put an Omniscience onto play because you get to cast that, put that onto the battlefield for free, and then you can just replay the rest of your hand. And they're playing cards like Tameo to return cards from your graveyard. So you return your Flood of Tears back from your graveyard to your hand, and you just do it all over again. I think it's one of those decks that's almost a little bit like the Nexus of Fate decks that are getting around, where you end up taking all the turns and you have all the fun and your opponent does nothing.
This is way cooler.
Yeah, it's a pretty cool deck. I have no idea if it will have any sort of legs. It seems like the sort of deck that if you could tune it right, it could be really cool, but it's pretty likely that if a deck like Mono Red hangs around, they're just going to put way too much pressure on you. If you're trying to get to 6 mana... to cast this spell, they're just going to kill you before then. And if you're trying to ramp with Llanowar Elves and those sorts of creatures, as soon as they figure out what you're doing, they kill your ramp creatures, and you know you're just going to get nowhere. So it might work, but who knows? It's just something that's piqued my interest.
Someone will spell pierce you, and then
that's exactly what I did.
That's your tears.
The deck I was playing Gift of Paradise and Guild Globe and Planeswalkers So it wasn't relying on creatures for the mana. Yep. So Planeswalkers.
Well, you're playing a lot of you're playing a lot of permanents that have a comes into play effect.
Yeah.
So like Gift of Paradise, where you gain 3 life. I think there's a new one in the new set, Utopia something or other. I think can't remember exactly what that one is. I think you draw a card or something. But yeah, a whole bunch of those types of things where you're happy to bounce them back to your hand, because when you cast them for free from your Omniscience, you're getting another effect and that sort of stuff. So yeah, it's just whether or not it can keep enough control of the board to get to that sort of late game.
The list,
and if it can, then it's just going to take over. So
yeah, the list I was playing against had Masterminds Acquisition, and I assume an extensive Wish sideboard. So I think that might be certainly an avenue worth exploring, because you can do some crazy things. It was 4 colors, everything but red, so it had access to multiple board sweepers. It might have even been 5 colours. I'm not sure, but...
Why not?
Yeah,
just do it all.
If you're 4, you may as well be 5. You've got Gift of Paradise, you've got Guild Globes. It made really good use of the Scrylands and Tameo to be able to get the combo online. It's super cool. What I'm interested in is how long the format can actually go on like this, because there's one card in the 3-mana Teferi that people have just abandoned counter spells altogether because...
Yeah, it's definitely warped the format.
Yeah, and then everyone's just going as big as they can. And honestly, I wonder if it's time for negates and absorbs to come back, and you probably just completely surprise people and, you know...
Yeah, the problem with that is, like, I've played a few mono-blue games over the last couple of weeks, not much, but if they resolve a small Teferi... and you've got a handful of counter spells, it's like, well, okay, now what do I do? I have no way.
There's a lot of Esper on Arena.
And that's the hard part.
Yeah, there's a lot of Esper on Arena, and the games are all about Little Teferi.
I mean, the reality is, in 3 months' time, we're going to get a new set. We're going to have a rotation. So a whole bunch of sets are going to leave, including, thankfully, Dominaria, which has Big Teferi, Hero of Dominaria. And that's a massive shake-up to the format. So I'm tipping we're going to have 2 or 3 months of really crazy standard where people are just playing all sorts of stuff with no Mythic Championship to sort of dictate the format. And then it's all going to change anyway. So, yeah, I think the next 2 or 3 months could be a pretty cool time to be playing where you can just brew up something and just do whatever, just go nuts. One card I really wanted to talk about is Risen Reef. What do you guys think about Risen Reef? This seems to be the hot card that everyone's talking about at the moment.
Best card in Standard.
I mean, like you said, man, everyone's talking about it. It seems very strong. But as you said, it could be the fact that everyone's just super hyped on all these spicy new cards, right? So Risen Reef, maybe we should just quickly read it, is a 3-mana 1/1. So it is 1 blue and a green, and it's a creature elemental. It says, whenever Risen Reef or another elemental enters the battlefield under your control, look at the top card of your library. If it's a land card, you may put it onto the battlefield tapped. If you don't put the card onto the battlefield, put it into your hand. So you get immediate value, right? Which is something that is really important with this kind of card slot. And to make any kind of real impact into Standard, it kind of has to, as people say, pay you on the way in or on the way out, and hopefully on the way in. And so, you know, you drop this thing down and either puts a land into play immediately, which is great because it's ramping you, or it draws you a card. So you kind of don't lose out. And then if you play another elemental, like another Risen Reef, then you get to draw two cards
or activate, that's where it starts to get out of hand.
Or you activate Chandra, as Scott was talking about earlier.
Yeah, exactly. Put two elementals into play. Yeah, potentially ramp two lands or draw two cards. It seems like
it can get out of control. The thing that I do wonder about is whether the fun police will just say, huh, that's cute, here's a shock.
Yeah.
And just like kill it on the spot. Like, yes, you don't lose a whole lot of value because you either ramped with a land or you drew a card. But I mean, it seems, I don't know, maybe a little unrealistic to expect it to just be able to run away with the game constantly, as people are reporting it is currently.
Well, that's its fail case, right? It either replaces itself or puts a land into play. So if that's the worst that the card does, that's fine. In the deck that we're just talking about with the Flood of Tears, this is obviously a 4-of, because you just want it to block a creature, but you want it to either get you a card to get you closer to your combo or ramp you into your combo. And there's mono red in the format. There's not a lot of other aggressive decks getting around, and there's a lot of slower mid-range and control decks being played. So the time is right for a 3-mana 1/1 to really shine, with this format being as it is. It's a card that lets you go bigger, faster than your opponent. So I think it's actually fine. There would be times, you know, other standard formats where this wouldn't even be on the radar, but because of where we're currently at, this card does everything that you want to do in this format.
Yeah,
I think it's actually going to get better after rotation.
Yeah,
because
we lose Goblin Chain Whirler,
and like there's a whole bunch of really powerful stuff that was in like Dominaria, that the mono red deck has been leveraging really hard.
Yeah, you lose like Fanatical Firebrand and things like that as well, which is good at pinging those guys. And yeah, it has the potential to get a little bit out of hand. And the thing, a lot of people are comparing it to a card from a previous set from Aether Revolt, which is Rogue Refiner, which is the same mana cost, 1 green blue. When it enters the battlefield, you draw a card, so it doesn't ramp you, but you also get 2 energy. So at that time, in that standard, energy was this horrible mechanic that everybody ended up hating was, yeah, definitely a bit of a bad idea. But that two energy definitely was helpful. You still drew the card when you played it, but the big difference was that it was a 3-2 instead of a 1-1. So it did everything you wanted in the decks that played it, which is the team or energy, the blue, red, green decks. It drew you the card, but it gave you a good attacking creature as well, and that's why it was really powerful. And this card, being a 1-1, is definitely not that, but it also has that synergies where you play another couple of elementals, even if they're just more Risen Reefs, and all of a sudden you're getting a ton of value out of it. And if you don't have those checks in the format, like your Goblin Chain Whirlers and Fanatical Firebrands and things that can pick off this guy before they get out of hand, then, yeah, it could be a problem. I don't see it being bad. I'm putting a bit of faith in the play design teams that they have now, that they would have tested these sorts of things and they know what's coming. But yeah, it seems like a cool card, and I'm definitely looking forward to playing it.
Yeah, it seems awesome. It's worth mentioning that Rogue Refiner was banned in that format.
Yes, it was too.
By the way, it actually was so good that it got banned.
Yeah.
You forget, because like Emrakul and other things were going on at the same time.
Yeah.
But yep. Yeah, that was certainly a powerful effect. And that's very clearly why they've started it as a 1-1. So literally everything will kill it, right? And it may just be time for people to play, you know, like more Moment of Craving, give a creature -2/-2 and that kind of stuff, and just bring back some cheaper interaction again, which has kind of been missing.
Yeah, I don't think that's actually the go against this deck, because it already pays you on the way in, and gaining the 2 life from the Moment of Craving isn't actually going to do that much for you, unless they're playing the Tima Elementals deck, which is an archetype that this card has spawned with the new Omnath and the Elementals in M20. And it's kind of an aggro, 3-color aggressive deck. So it's a turn slower than the mono red or the Gruul decks, but it's built around synergy, and Risen Reef is a big part of that. It fuels your aggro draws, and it's a, you know, because you either get rid of the lands off the top of your deck and draw more threats, or you draw more threats. So it's great. But I think they took a lot of the cues in the design of this card from a card going way back to Dissension in Coiling Oracle, I think, which was a...
Oh, yeah, love that card.
Yeah. Great. So for those who... memory doesn't go back that far. It was green.
weren't alive when that card came out.
It's a green and a blue for a 1-1. Yes, yeah, so, sorry, kids. You know, you won't see this card on Arena. No. So green and blue for a 1-1 snake elf druid. So Simic have been melding creature types together for a long time. And when Coiling Oracle enters the battlefield, reveal the top card of your library. If it's a land card, put it into play. Otherwise, put that card into your hand. So there's a couple of subtle differences to Risen Reef, but very similar. And this is a card that anyone who likes value is all over. I love this card because I can get value out of it, and then I can equip a Skull Clamp to it and get more value. But that's a whole Vintage Cube thing. This card didn't actually see a great deal of play. So they've seen that Rogue Refiner probably went too far. So Risen Reef, they've kind of got that sweet spot in the middle. And
Seems to be a pretty good balance. Yeah, I'm looking forward to seeing what it does in the format.
Kind of. It seems in some way that it's more push than both of the other two, because it keeps paying you. So, like, I don't think that Moment of Craving is a good card in terms of, like, oh, sweet, I gain life. It's like, if I don't answer this and they play another one, and something else, like, it will just win the game because you just get so much card advantage out of it. And it's kind of like, it's a must-kill threat, even if it's not like a full elemental deck. If you play two in a row, like, how does your opponent come back from that? You're either two lands in front or two cards deeper. That's a big... And then they've got two creatures that they have to answer, or you may play a third one or something like that, because it's digging you towards those next things. So the other ones, they're all one-shot effects, which was... like, super good. And the body on Rogue Refiner was obviously super relevant as well, because it would attack really well. It could kill a bunch of the stuff that was attacking into it. But this thing will just keep paying you. You just can't let it sit there.
Yeah, that's true. I guess even it means that... I guess that is part of what makes it a really good card. Like, if I'm an Esper deck and I want to answer a deck that's trying to play Flood of Tears, I don't necessarily want to have my Kaya's Wraths in after, or my spot removal in after sideboarding, but I have to. So my deck's actually worse. So it's, yeah, I guess just because of the position that it sits in the format, it's great. So it's, you know, there's good cards. So is there any other cards that jump out from M20 that anybody wants to mention before we wrap it up?
So I got one really quickly. It's actually a reprint. So it's God's Willing, and it's not the flashiest card, but it pairs really well with a couple of strategies that I was kind of interested in before. So it's a single white mana that gives, protection from something, or gains indestructible when you scry one.
Target creature you control.
Good job looking target, up the card.
Yeah, target creature you control gains protection from the color of your choice until end of turn. Color one of white for an instant at uncommon.
And exactly. Scry one.
And scry one.
Just so for good measure. This is a card from Theros, which is in all the heroic decks at the time.
Yeah. So the card that the deck that it seems like it slots really well into is the Feather deck.
Yes.
And like I've played as the mono red player a couple of times against the Feather deck. And it's just
not fun. Like, not fun.
We've all done it, right? And so Feather was a card from the last set, and it basically, if you cast a spell that targeted a creature of yours, you exiled it and you got it back at the beginning of the next end step. And so it's basically just perpetual value from these instants that you're casting at your creatures, and it seems like a really fun strategy. And it's something that I thought was just a really good pickup for that deck. It just kind of fills in a couple of the clunkier cards that were used in there. There was like Crash Through and stuff, which people were using just to give like, your creatures trample and you draw a card. But giving it actual, protection from removal, and a scry is not as good as drawing a card, but the front half of it is a little bit better. So
yeah, there's a couple of other cards that got printed in M20 that go, I've seen some... red, white, green. I've completely drawn a blank on what that shard is called. Naya, that's the one.
Naya.
Yeah, there's a couple of green cards that people have been playing in that deck as well. There's Veil of Summer, which lets you draw a card and gives you and permanents you control hexproof from blue and black. So counters removal spells. It can counter Thought Erasures. So not only do you not discard the card, you also get to draw a card. That's quite a good one. There's an enchantment, Season of Growth, which is one and a green. Whenever a creature enters the battlefield under your control, you get to scry one. That's the minor part of it. The other part of the card is whenever you cast the spell that targets a creature you control, draw a card. So, all these things sort of steamroll with Feather and what's going on with that. I think the mana would be quite hard for those decks. I think Feather is one, it's white, white, red, or is it white, red, red? It's one of those two.
I lost a game the other
quite,
day.
Quite hard.
I lost a game the other day when my opponent had 5 lands in play. And on turn 4, they cast a Night Vale Predator, which is blue, blue, black, black. And then on turn 5, they cast Lyra Dawnbringer. So I reckon the mana can work. it's in the format with temples and shock lands and such. I think it's
and the check lands. Yeah, there's a lot of good dual lands in the format at the moment. So it's just finding that right balance and getting them to work.
Yep.
But once we hit rotation, we'll be losing some of those. So yeah, it'll be interesting to see what happens. But one other card I just wanted to mention on the way out before we wrap up is the green ley line. So the ley lines, they were printed originally in that was Ravnica block. They were like Dissension and Guildpack. Was it Time Spiral? I think it was Time Spiral. No one's going to correct me on it. Anyway,
yes.
Can't remember. The original ley lines were a long time ago, and they're basically the ley lines are a set of cards that if you have them in your opening hand, so the first lot of cards that you draw, you can actually put them on the battlefield to start the game. So usually they cost 4 or 5 mana, and you get this advantage by being able to put it straight onto the battlefield at the start of the game. So quite a good thing. Often what happens with the ley lines is they're not really that good in multiples. So usually you would run 4 of them so that you're increasing your chances of getting them in your opening hand. But once you, you know, you get that first one, you put it on the battlefield, your second one is kind of useless. They just sit in your hand and do nothing unless your opponent kills the one that you've got out there. The one that we've got printed in this set from green is Leyline of Abundance, which is two green, not that you're going to pay that mana cost very often, with the Leyline Claws that you can put it in the battlefield if it's in your opening hand. But it has an ability, whenever you tap a creature for mana, add an additional green. So that actually stacks. So if you have multiple ley lines in your opening hand, you put them all out on the battlefield, you play a forest, you play a turn one Llanowar Elves, all of a sudden that Llanowar Elves next turn is tapping for three or four mana. So this card is going into these decks with Nissa from the last set that makes all your forests tap for extra mana. And basically, I've heard of people playing games where on turn two, with multiple ley lines in play, they're playing Nissa, which is, I think, a five-cost card, and then plussing Nissa to make one of their lands a creature. So now that taps for an extra bunch of mana, and then playing another Planeswalker and doing all these other things and just getting way out of hand. The other good thing with this ley line is it also has an activated ability, which is six green, so eight mana, put a +1/+1 counter on each creature you control. So yes, it's good, it generates all this extra mana for you, but it also has a mana sink for you for later on in the game, where all of a sudden it's like, well, I've got like 16 mana that I can tap on turn four. Well, I can activate this ability twice and put two +1/+1 counters on all of my creatures. So it's going to be interesting. It's a cool card to brew around, but it definitely leads to some really broken things that could be done if you get the right number of them in your opening hand. But it is all based around creatures tapping for mana. And yeah, we've mentioned it already tonight that once people know what you're doing, they know that you need those creatures in play. Well, what are they going to do? They're going to kill your mana creatures as soon as they can to stop those sorts of things happening. So yeah, that's just a cool card that I quite like the look of. So
what will they learn about free mana though?
Yeah, they never do, but yeah.
They won't.
No.
And well, that card's going straight into my Enfends of the Foremost commander deck, because a lot of mana creatures and the ability to just pump out counters, so it's got use there as well. But I mean, we've had creature based ramp decks in this format for a little while, so. And they've been quite successful with the Bant ramp decks. So I guess how hard you push the card in that strategy, I guess it's definitely worth testing.
Yeah, that's right. But
we are about to lose Llanowar Elves as well.
Yes, that is right. Llanowar Elves was in
mana creatures.
It was in M19 and Dominaria, yeah. So that will go in the rotation in a few months. So September. Yeah. Like we said, this next few months is going to be interesting. There's going to be a lot of crazy decks. So if you're the sort of person that likes to brew, which I have my occasions where I'll be driving home and all of a sudden have a bolt of lightning hit my head and come up with some crazy ideas, and I'm sending them out to the guys going, oh, what do you reckon of this? And usually they're garbage. But this seems like a good time of the year to be doing those sorts of things. And who cares? Just brew up a deck, put it up on Arena and go nuts. Well, you got nothing to lose. You never know. You may break the format, and then you can take that deck to your local game store and go and crush everybody there and maybe win a GP or who knows. So, yeah, good time for Magic. But I think that's going to pretty much wrap us up for today. On the way out, just a reminder that if you do have any feedback for us, or you come up with any sweet brews that you want us to give a go, or maybe you want Chewy to play those decks on the YouTube channel, then feel free to hit us up. You can find us on Twitter at MagicBeansCast, or you can send us an email, MagicBeansCast@gmail.com. You'll find us on Facebook, same thing, MagicBeansCast. And then, yeah, the YouTube channel. So if you just search for Magic Beans or Magic Beans Cast or Magic Beans Podcast, you will find us one of those ways. So, yeah, feel free to hit us up. We definitely love to have some feedback. These episodes should all be live out there in the real wild world, so hopefully you're enjoying the content that we're putting out. So we'd love to hear back from you. Any tips, any ideas, any discussion topics you want to talk about, then definitely hit us up. So we'll be back probably in another week or so. Any last comments from you guys?
trying to find out how many wild cards I'm short.
Yes, the all-important wild cards in Arena.
I will play any deck anybody sends me, provided I have enough rare wild cards to build it.
Cool.
Which is one.
Yeah.
Sounds good. All right, too easy. Well, that'll do us for now, and we'll leave you to it. So we will see you next time.